Okay, so check this out. Last week, I talked about the new sponsor on the show, and that is the Path to Pain-Free ebook project. So Path to Pain-Free is a collaboration between two TMS and mind-body coaches. There's Miriam Gauci Bongiovanni and Duncan Clark. And together, they have written a day-by-day program for TMS. It's entirely DIY, and it has exercises that follow each lesson that's really going to help you increase your awareness and how your symptoms, why they're persisting, and primarily it helps you identify those beliefs and behaviors and actions that are probably interfering with your recovery. So Path to Pain-Free includes lessons on how to overcome pain conditioning and how to neutralize the stress response. Together, these two have really shared their personal and professional experiences, and they've combined them to create this program that combines TMS work with pain neuroscience. We talk a lot about neuroscience on the show. And so that is really what this is all about. You're going to hear from Miriam up close next week in an interview, but I wanted to make sure that I stop by and direct you on where it is that you should go to painoutsidethebox.com/path-2-pain-free for more information. All radio is dead. Welcome back to another episode of the show. My name is Eddie. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast, and it is Wednesday, January the 6th. Happy New Year. Thanks for coming back and joining me a little bit longer. So I wanted to give a special shout out to the patrons of the podcast first, to Brooke, to Carrie, Jason, David, Colette, Matthew, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Francisco, Ashley, Michael, Mike, Victoria, Chad, Anthony, Jen, and Nate, Eddie and Jenny, Christina, Ross, Julie, Casey, Brian, Arnie, Barb, and Kim. Thank you all so much for being supporters of the podcast for such a long time. I greatly appreciate each and every one of you. So excited for today's interview. I won't spend too much of a long intro because Rebecca Tolan and I, we go through a lot of depth here. And to me, if I had to pull one thing out of our conversation, it's really that happiness doesn't come from the outside. And that theme is going to come back up over and over again as we kind of roll through this. You can find her on her website at RebeccaTolan.com. That's RebeccaTolin.com. She's got a really, really great website, a really interesting story too. So just going into that and being able to get some of her background, some in the media, in news and broadcasting and things like that. And I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. I love that kind of stuff. Broadcasting was where I really got my start with any sort of a microphone, and that was in sports radio. But Rebecca has a class that is coming up at the end of the month, and so we're going to talk a little bit about that. She's going to tell her story and what ultimately led her to wellness. So thank you so much for tuning in again. Again, this has been the Mind and Fitness Podcast, and I will see you all next week. But for now, here is Rebecca Tolan. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, as always, Eddie Lindenstein, and I'm really excited to have this guest on today. I was a part of a, I don't know if we'd call it a roundtable or a webinar or something like that, a month or two ago, and Jim Prusak was the one that had asked me to be on it, and I have such a long and extensive history with him, but there were a couple other hosts that were a part of it, and so one of them is with me today, and I'm really excited to kind of dive in with her. Rebecca Tolan, also from San Diego, should be on the line. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hi, Eddie.
Thanks for coming on with me. I try to do, it's not always easy when I interview somebody to get background on them, unless they're somebody, like a lot of times when I have recovery stories, it's from, you know, it's somebody that isn't, they might not be a coach in the field. They're just really very much like telling their story. And then when I went on and read some of your background, you know, previous careers and that kind of stuff, I was blown away. I thought it was all so interesting. And so I'm looking forward to diving in there.
Thank you. Yeah, we had you on that Simply Sarno webinar, and it was cool to actually see you while you were talking about your story for a change. And it was kind of a thrill for me because I've listened to your podcast for several years, and it's really been a ray of light, especially when I was recovering. And then I heard a recent episode where you were reading people's comments about thankfulness and what they were grateful for in 2020 against all odds. And you invited me on the show, and I kind of like jumped in the air, and I was like, "Oh, that's me!" it was kind of a thrill.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited to have you here. Tell us about, you know, I'm always so curious on sort of what what gets people from one career to another. Like, let me give you an example that I went to college for broadcasting. I did 2 years in sports radio and in broadcasting. Like, that was the plan. And actually when I recently came across my college entrance essay that I had used to get in to my university, and it was all about how I was going to be, and I would still love it if this job ever came up. I don't think it's going to happen, but, that I wanted to be a professional wrestling television writer. That was the whole reason I was going to college. And then, and then I went and worked at ESPN for a couple of years, in programming. And now I'm in, I work in software for my day job, and I do this podcast on the side. So, you have a pre-life, tell me about kind of what you were doing several years ago and kind of what your background is.
Yeah. I appreciate your journey too, because you definitely have a voice for radio and broadcast. So I'm glad you made it back into that field in a different way than you may have thought. So I knew from the time I was in sixth grade that I wanted to be a journalist. I remember writing my career report actually in sixth grade that I would be a writer, I would be a journalist. Later on, my dad encouraged me to be a TV news reporter and kind of go that route. And so I did. And I was really determined. I worked my way up. I started in super small markets like Bend, Oregon and Reno, Nevada, where you're shooting all your own stuff. And then you leap up on the set and anchor, running your own teleprompter and all kinds of things. And then I moved to the NBC station in San Francisco. Along the way, I was anchoring, I was reporting, some producing, and I loved it. I mean, when I look back now, I loved it from the neck up. You know, it was stressful, but it was fascinating. And then after San Francisco, I decided I actually wanted to move into public broadcasting, because I didn't want to chase ambulances anymore. Yeah. And so I was covering science and nature and was back in San Diego where my parents were and family and that kind of thing.
Bendo, so what's your origin story? Where were you born?
Oh, I was born in Cleveland, okay. But our family moved from the Midwest when I was five. So we moved to Sacramento and then San Diego. And all my jobs have pretty much been around the Western United States. But I was really on a mission, and I would have gone anywhere the work is, because that's kind of how that business is. You work your way up.
Yep.
And really, I don't think I would have voluntarily left that career. I was working for a magazine show back in 2004 when life took a really unexpected turn.
Sacramento, by the way, I'm from Chico. I don't know if you know that, but
I didn't.
Yeah, so not too far from Sacramento. So it's I feel like if you tell people, hey, name cities in California, they're inevitably going to say probably L.A. and San Francisco. And then maybe they say San Diego, but there's very few that will ever list Sacramento despite it being the capital of the state.
Right. So much less Chico, which is quite charming, actually.
Yeah. It's I follow a there's a Facebook page that I follow that's basically like, what's Chico like now? And it kind of seems on the surface of that, the Facebook page, it sounds like it's kind of a little bit more run down than I remember it. But I also remember I moved back, you know, because I had left there in 96 and then tried to move back in 2006. I was going to go to Butte College and then go to Chico State, which is where my parents went. I think I romanticized what it would be like to live there. Like, and then realizing that, gosh, the Pacific Northwest for me has way more stuff that I'm interested in than, I mean, you know, Yuba City, Chico, Paradise, like that whole area in the middle of summer is not a glamorous place to be by any stretch of the imagination. So
you would not want to be in your garage.
Yeah, no way. Oh my God.
Wait. This podcast in the summer. Yeah.
Well, I remember I had stayed there with a friend of mine, for a few weeks before I could find a place to live. And when they would set the air conditioning, because we don't have air conditioning in Seattle. I mean, most places don't. And, when I went there, it was so hot in the house and I was looking at the thermostat and it was like, you know, 79, 80, it was a, you know, 110 outside. And I was like, can we turn it down? And that's the thing, like, don't touch the thermostat. Don't touch the thermostat. Runs right. That bill up way too high, you know? So you had said took an interesting turn. What year did you say that pertained to?
That was in 2004.
So what happened in 2004 that that was an interesting turn?
Yeah, so I ended up going on a trip abroad. It was to Japan. And I actually experienced a sexual assault when I was there. It happened to be with someone I knew who was actually from the States. But it was really traumatic, as you can imagine. And when I was coming back on the plane ride, which was about 20 hours, I got a really bad urinary tract infection. And this came on suddenly in the airplane. And I realized it was happening before the plane took off. And I begged to be let off the plane, but they couldn't because my luggage and everything was there. So I passed out in that plane ride home. There was so much pain. And of course, there was emotional trauma. And when I got back to the States, I kind of blocked it out. And what I understand about trauma now is that's just really a coping mechanism. And I tried to go back to my work, and I was able to kind of push through things for almost a year. I went to an integrative medicine doctor, a homeopath, a few different people, and of course they couldn't find anything wrong. But I really just went to work and came home. I didn't know what was going on. And then, strangely enough, actually life took me back to Asia the following winter. And it was a stressful trip, but not certainly like the first one. And when I was coming back that time on the airplane, I got really bad cold, which sort of turned into a flu. And by the time I got back, I had such intense symptoms, viral symptoms. It was just like everything was on fire. Everything hurt, ached, burned. It was really hard to concentrate, form sentences. I actually started getting hot flashes and I was only 34. I mean, my whole system went haywire.
Yeah.
And I couldn't sleep either. It was really scary. I didn't know what was going on. I couldn't really even move around that much. I could sort of walk from, you know, the bedroom to the bathroom, but I was just really weak and exhausted.
And you got, what were some of the, I read on the website, you were talking about some of the diagnoses that you had received over the years. What were some of those? Or I guess like what was the, because you're going to different people and they're probably giving you different opinions or, you know, different diagnosis or whatever. What was like, were there one or a couple that were sort of the prevailing ones that maybe you kept hearing over and over, or were they truly just all different?
Yeah, no, it did start coming back really consistently to chronic fatigue syndrome.
Okay.
And that usually starts with sort of a viral episode, not always. At first, I literally couldn't even get to a doctor probably for some weeks because I really couldn't go anywhere. My system was just crashed.
Yeah.
But then I started pretty frantically going to doctors and, you know, allopathic doctors, naturopaths, and they all said chronic fatigue syndrome. Sometime it was fibromyalgia, post-viral malaise or syndrome, Epstein-Barr syndrome, later interstitial cystitis related to the bladder. But really what I kept hearing over and over, and I remember even from a naturopathic doctor that I thought was going to be more hopeful, was, this is really mysterious. We don't know what causes it, and there's no cure. And you're just going to have to live with this. You're going to have to manage it. You probably won't be able to go back to your career. And, you know, we can give you supplements. You can get on these diets. Later on, I went to different experts in chronic fatigue syndrome who recommended these IVs with antiviral medication, which completely crashed my system. I mean, then I was sort of out for a few months. I was doing vitamin IVs. I went to, in all, about 50 practitioners over a 13-year period.
Wow.
From, you know, specialists like endocrinologists and rheumatologists to shamanic healers. And it was always sort of about treating the physical symptoms. Nobody ever asked, did anything stressful happen prior to the onset of symptoms? At least I don't recall talking about that.
Yeah. Was there, so how did you eventually get to a point of, I mean, was it somebody making a suggestion to you that, hey, what's going on in your life? I mean, everybody kind of has this unique circumstance or unique chain of events that eventually leads them to mind body. And how did you eventually get there?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, you know, along the way, I did start realizing that this trauma probably had a big impact on me. And by the way, it brought up trauma from an earlier sexual assault when I was 19. And that was with someone I didn't know. And I really was terrified for my life in that case. And again, I didn't talk to anybody about it back then. And I think that knowing what I know about the brain and learned associations, you know, these similar circumstances really triggered just so much repressed emotion that I couldn't process. And so, of course, my brain was protecting me from it. But I did start going to some psychotherapists. I went to someone who practiced EMDR, and it was helpful in that I was actually able to articulate what had happened in Japan, because I had really held it in. I was ashamed. I just felt sort of frozen around it. And I think that was helpful, but it didn't shift the bar on my symptoms at all. I also went to someone who did something called Phoenix Rising Yoga Therapy, which was actually really powerful. There's sort of some guided dialogue and you're moving your body in different positions.
Yeah.
And I was reliving some of the traumas in those sessions and actually creating a different outcome. So just spontaneously, I would create an outcome, you know, where I would like kick him at the crotch and go running out. And I remember after those sessions feeling so empowered, and I would get a burst of energy. But interestingly, again, it didn't really shift the needle on the symptoms. So I think that all these practitioners, the psychologists, as well as the medical doctors, and even the healers were still kind of coming at it from this place that you're sick, you're broken, whether that's emotionally or physically. And we're just going to kind of try to manage that.
Yeah.
But none of the practitioners, at least for many years, including myself, you know, I didn't connect that really the symptoms were the stress, were the trauma. It was the same thing, and that was the cause.
The different outcomes thing, or the change the outcome, what did you say what was the method? What was that called?
Yeah, it's called Phoenix Rising Yoga Therapy. And it's a powerful modality, because basically, for instance, if I say, oh, I'm feeling a weight in my chest and it feels closed in, then the therapist would sort of move me onto a bolster or something that I would have to open my whole chest cavity. So
oh,
it would sort
got
of
it.
Make a really intense, make me intensely feel into that discomfort. So there, that was for me kind of a foray into feeling body sensations. And I should also say, all along, I was practicing gentle yoga. I mean, I was a yogi before this started, and for many years, I could really only kind of do restorative yoga just on the floor, but it was really soothing. And then I started meditating in 2011, and I got really into transcendental meditation, and I found that really calmed my nervous system, and I think it put me into a state where eventually I was more receptive to really getting TMS. I think all those things were helpful, the emotional work, the meditation, the yoga. But they, for me, weren't really the missing piece.
Okay. Yeah. And so you're kind of going through, and it seems like you're sort of scraping the surface in a few ways of what could be the cause. I mean, that seems to be kind of the overlying or the underscored theme, is like we're making dents, but it's not everything that's lasting, right? You're still kind of doing the whack-a-mole thing. And then so then
what? Yes. Yeah, exactly. And whack-a-mole is a great analogy, because really when I look back in those years, and that was about, it was actually about 10 years where I was on this roller coaster of chasing after cures. Even though I was doing some of this kind of deeper work, it was still to get rid of the symptoms and get better. And there was still a belief that I couldn't, because, you know, I'd been told that so many times. Although something deep down really did believe that I could, you know, and didn't believe all that. But that roller coaster of just giving my power away and going to doctors and the next healer, I think ended when, first of all, I had just beat my head against the wall, you know, 800 times, and finally realized this isn't really working. and it creates more frustration and just these dashed hopes. And it's really expensive. And I was taking 25 supplements a day. And like a lot of your other guests, I was also monitoring all kinds of things, my temperature, my pulse, what I ate that day, how much screen time I had, where my symptoms were, in a scale of 1 to 10. And it was just like chasing my own tail. And, you know, I think that what was a turning point for me was I went to this shamanic healer, and nothing against, I think there are people who are really good at what they do, but she, I remember she was smoking her tobacco pipe, and she asked me about the trauma, and I didn't normally talk about it so easily, but I started telling her about it, and I actually started crying, and then she changed the subject dramatically and said, "Did I tell you about my cat, my new cat?" And it was so jarring, and I kind of just froze up. Later, I realized she had some training, and she thought I was getting overactivated, so she tried to change the subject. But it wasn't very skillful, and I felt sort of re-traumatized. And I remember her saying, "It's $200 for like this hour of her smoking her pipe and telling me about her cat." And I just, that was it. It was like, no more. I'm not going to anybody else who's going to tell me how to get well, who's clearly completely misguided. She later apologized, by the way. But I think at that point, I really let go of not hope that I could get better, but just striving to do that through other people.
Yep.
And so I started really just kind of enjoying isn't quite the right word, but doing what I could that brought some relief. At this point, the symptoms weren't quite as intense that I felt I had the flu 24/7 and insomnia all the time, but it was still pretty intense, and I would go through different phases. I couldn't do that much. I was on disability at this point. I could like go to the grocery store, and that would be, you know, my energy for the day. So I was listening to Eckhart Tolle a lot. And if you know him, he just like is so zen. And I felt really pulled into this state of peace. I was meditating. I started some creative writing and journaling. And I actually started experiencing a lot of peace. And it was a really interesting dichotomy, because I had still intense pain and fatigue and that tired and wired feeling. But I actually felt like it was okay. And it was kind of the first time I got what in yoga and some of the Eastern mystical traditions talk about, you know, your happiness doesn't come from outer conditions. And I really kind of got that. Like, there was something in me that was okay, even though the body was really hurting. And I think it was from that place that I met somebody. So I decided I'm just going to kind of do what I can do. And I took this online writing class called Write Into Light. And it was just a great community. And I was writing poetry, and it was a creative outlet. And I met a woman on there who said, you know, I had chronic fatigue syndrome, and I healed through this really amazing mind-body work. Do you want to hear about it? And she mentioned Dr. Sarno. And actually, I didn't mention this yet, Eddie, but I had read Healing Back Pain some years ago really for my mom who had back pain. And I loved his message. It was like, yes, this makes so much sense.
And that was, when you read the book for your mom, was that pre Japan trip or was that after Japan trip? I'm just curious.
Yeah, that was after the Japan trip. So it was probably like 5 or 6 years after that when I was actively looking for help.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, maybe there is timing to life. I didn't look into his other books and I just didn't see how that possibly applied to me.
Yeah. And I kind of wish it was, I mean, I know that he wrote other books, but Healing Back Pain is the most popular. And I think some people feel that it doesn't apply to them simply because of the title. You know what I mean? So much of it is about the back and you're not talking about the back at all with the things that you're describing.
Exactly. And I think that we sometimes do need to hear symptoms just like ours.
Yep.
And actually, I also had somebody had sent me, there's two pages in the Mind-Body Prescription on CFS, chronic fatigue syndrome. And someone had even sent that to me at one point. But I guess that wasn't enough either. You know, I've looked back and thought, why didn't I wake up to it then? Why didn't I get it? But I don't know, I wasn't ready or I just didn't have the detail that this woman gave me. So we got on the phone and I actually said to her, you know, this was in the winter of 2018 and I had a lot of symptoms then. And I said, I pretty much have practically a migraine and I can talk for 10 minutes. We talked for 3 hours and at the end of that call, I actually ran around the block about 10 times.
That's cool. Yeah.
So that call completely changed my life. Now, this woman I'm so grateful to, named Kathy, she wasn't a coach. She was not a doctor. She had just practiced TMS for many different things she had healed from. But she told me in that call really specifically, I had all these symptoms you had. You know, she'd ask me about my symptoms and she'd say, I had every single one. And here's exactly what I did. And here's what's happening in your brain. So, you know, I had been a science journalist and I'm kind of a science geek. And so that got through to me. Like once I understood what was happening in my brain, at the very end of the call, she said, Rebecca, you are not sick. And that was the light bulb moment for me. It was almost like just this big sort of joke that I saw. I'm not sick. Like the symptoms are real, but I'm literally not sick. And I did have a sort of spontaneous either recovery or remission, that my whole body filled with energy. The headache and the aching went away. I literally started running around the block and I had been like in bed down and out. So it was just a moment of total belief. And it showed me that to the degree we can align with that belief where everything in us gets it and knows it, you know, the brain and the body respond in kind.
You know, the something you mentioned earlier about though you were, you know, the pain wasn't as intense, but you were still, you know, there definitely still was a lot of pain there, but you were okay with it. I feel like there's two, and I talk about this a lot, not necessarily together, but there's, kind of a couple of different phases that I think need to happen for people. And I, one of the things I say is like the first step or first place to really get to is a place of indifference. And it sounds like that's maybe where that began. And, I almost feel like, and, you know, maybe correct me if you think this is incorrect, but, if you would have had the call with that person before getting to a place of indifference, it might not have landed as well or landed as impactful. Do you think that that's probably accurate?
And you know, Eddie, that actually gives me a lot of comfort because sometimes it's easy to look back and think, why didn't I wake up to that? But I think you're right. I really was in that resistant place where it was like I was still fighting the symptoms internally and in my own mind. Like there is really something wrong with me. This is scary. This is dangerous. I've got to get rid of these symptoms. The indifference was the best thing. And I was able to actually reach a state of peace to where it's actually okay. This is happening in this moment. I can actually still enjoy life, even though I'm just at home. Maybe I'm outside feeling the sun on my skin, just looking at the birds and the trees. There was really a sense of indifference and even acceptance and peace. And that was, you're right. That was a portal for me to really get, oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sick after all.
There was a, so Dr. Sarno's like his actual discipline, or what you would call him, would be a physiatrist. That's his, that was his title, which is a doctor of physical medicine. And a physiatrist that I met eight or nine months before I found Dr. Sarno's work. So I was close to the worst of, you know, the worst I could possibly be. And he had said, you know, I went and saw him several times and we tried a bunch of different things. And then finally, he had just said, you know, I find that the less that we focus on things like this, the less they're going to impact us. And
yeah.
What I heard was, so you're saying it's all in my head, fuck this guy, and I never went back. But if I would have, I wasn't ready for that message. I wasn't at the place of indifference. And then when I read Sarno's book, and I was kind of like, this is radically different, and this sounds very feasible. If I would have met with that doctor a few days after reading the book and getting to that place, it probably would have landed completely different, even though the message is the same. But the periods of time are different, and where are you, you know, in terms of your readiness, basically.
Absolutely. It absolutely is this indifference. And, and I think also the way you receive the message, I don't know for you, if reading it in the book maybe wasn't so threatening or intimidating, but being able to kind of learn about that science, and it's not personal, you know, it's not that somebody's telling you you're making it up, but that it's like, oh, this is just actually what the brain does when it feels scared or angry.
So it almost sounds like you had, you have this call and you get this rush of energy and then you start running and all this kind of stuff. I mean, was it over? Were symptoms over at that point? Because with me as an example, like I had a good dent when I first read Healing Back Pain, and enough to where, you know, I had gone a long time without training in my sport and lifting weights again and all that kind of stuff. I started that stuff the next day because I was like, if I'm ever going to get past this, I need to take some drastic steps. At the same time, like there still was this long lull where things kind of stayed the same, or they would move, I feel like I would get 5% better and then nothing would happen for a month, and then 10% better, nothing would happen for a month. Is that kind of how does yours drone on, or was it pretty immediate after that call?
Well, it's so important you bring that up because, you know, everybody hears about the book cure and that one moment. And even if someone just heard this story and the moment, I am not sick, I wasn't sick, other people could, maybe be inspired, but also lose hope if that doesn't happen for them. Yep. So I will say that it did kind of drone on. So I had that moment where I literally felt great in my physical body, and that lasted for a couple of days. But then there's these old neural pathways. So symptoms started coming back, the fatigue would come back, the insomnia would come back. And I knew at this point, this is it. Like Sarno's work, Schubner's work, this is absolutely 100% it. But I just need to really learn better ways to get this kind of in my mind and body on a daily basis. So I think at that point I reached out to Howard Schubner, and you know, he's like the nicest guy on earth. He emails everybody back this extensive answer. And he said, there's a great physical therapist and TM coach. I'm sorry, TMS coach in San Diego, Jim Prusak. And I started working with Jim, and actually Jim came to my house back in those days where we could meet.
I was going to say, when would that happen?
I know. And actually it was great because I think that he has such a calming presence, he's just very soothing. So I think being in his presence really helped. And I met with him about 8 months. And we just went over all the principles. And for me, it was really scary to go outside of my comfort zone because I had a really small life. I mean, I went from being this world traveling TV news reporter to just being at home pretty much all the time. Yeah. And he worked with me on starting to go out, starting to do some freelance work. For instance, even if I would go out and meet a friend for dinner, this thing happened for years where I would get total insomnia. I was just hyper stimulated and vigilant to every bit of stimulation. So he worked with me on just, you know, going out and maybe I would meet someone. I would get insomnia. The next day I would feel like I have the flu, but I just was indifferent to it. It's like, okay, I'm safe. I'm okay. I now know what's happening. I'm not going to be hostage to this. And I just slowly but surely kind of expanded my boundaries. I remember he worked with me on taking my first trip in an airplane, which that was a trigger for me, right? And I flew across the country to meet these women who were in the writing class that, where I made this discovery in Pennsylvania, in this old farmhouse. And I was so scared to do it. And I got all these symptoms, but I had the time of my life. It was so fun. And I didn't care. Like, I really didn't care if I slept or, you know, because the thing is, a lot of what perpetuates the symptoms or even the intensity of the insomnia is just that emotional catastrophizing and that fear that I'm not going to be able to function or whatever. So by that point, I really wasn't doing that. It was just like, okay, I got this. And Jim does a lot of the somatic work, different audio meditations and kind of guiding me into the body sensations. I do a lot of that for myself and clients now. And I think that's actually that might be the most powerful thing for me besides the knowledge. And so he would guide me into just kind of feeling the anger that was coming up. And sometimes memories would come up. But usually that raw energy would just sort of shift and let up. And to me, that is really kind of feeling the emotion, even if it's a physical sensation. And then that just slowly but surely kind of opened up more room in my system to process the emotion and to feel safe.
You know, I'd love for you to go a little bit, you know, your, I guess your belief or your understanding or your explanation, because to me, somatic work is, I sort of go back and forth on this. I think at this moment, maybe ask me tomorrow, somatic tracking or experiencing is the most powerful tool in the toolkit, at least for me. Yeah. And I think it can be for a lot of people. However, getting a grip on it is tough. Right. It's a tough thing to explain. You had the advantage of Jim being there in your living room. Right. So teaching of that is like Julie Markowitz, who, you know, she was on the podcast a couple of days ago with Jim, and she was talking about how she just completed her first year of somatic training. And I had said, you know, to me, that seems like a really tough thing to learn about, not in person, because it was scheduled to be in person and then moved to online because of the state of the world right now. And so talk about the, because feeling your feelings is tough. And I think that people don't really know even what that means. And I'm not even sure that I can even do it justice. I'm hoping that you can do it better than I can. you know, sort of leaning into it or, you know, feeling the emotion or as it relates to somatic, can you try and just give us a synopsis on what that means if people are listening to this and having a tough time understanding that?
Yeah, because I do think that that's a really powerful piece for people who aren't responding to the knowledge and the behavioral changes, maybe because they have trauma. I actually think the somatic work is especially helpful if people have sort of trauma. What we've learned from Peter Levine, who brought somatic experiencing to the world, is that trauma is actually in the body, in the nervous system. And so that's where we feel it. But even if you don't have that, I mean, everybody's got some traumas, everybody has stress, everybody has repressed emotions. Really, I mean, there's a couple gateways in that I like, and some of them are just really neutral, which is the breath, you know, feeling the back of the body on the chair, feeling the feet on the floor, kind of becoming really focused on how you're supported by the surface that you're in. Julie spoke about this in your recent podcast, orienting, looking around the environment, but then coming into the breath. Sometimes with clients, I even do things like thinking of a positive memory and seeing how that feels in the body. If they just can't go into the discomfort to help them sort of start to be embodied, because most of us are just living from the neck up.
Yep.
So that's really helpful to go into it. And then with people who are able to just starting to feel the discomfort, I've done some trainings with Schubner and Alan Gordon, and they do a lot of this kind of work where you're tracking the sensations in the body. So some people say, I can't feel emotion, and that's okay. You feel something. It may be a physical sensation. So that's kind of a gateway in where you're just kind of tracking that sensation, maybe the perimeter of it. And oftentimes that will shift, and sometimes it does give way to an emotion. Sometimes it doesn't, and that's okay. But just having kind of some energy and awareness in the body is really helpful. I now, when I do get symptoms, and they're very mild, but obviously I'm human, and I don't think we're ever not going to get some symptoms. You know, we need pain and fatigue as warning signals. We just obviously want to turn down the sensitivity to that, so it happens when there's a real danger rather than a perceived one. But when I do get symptoms, I just always ask, what am I feeling emotionally? And I'll just pause whenever I can. It might be later that night, just sort of ask, what am I feeling emotionally? And just see if there's any sensations in the body. There might be something in my heart that's sort of a pulsating, or butterflies in the stomach, or tears in the eyes. It can be subtle, but it's a really powerful practice. And I think it's actually, even that one question has changed my life a lot. I actually use it daily, but you know, one of Sarno's don'ts is don't repress emotion. But really what that means is feel emotion.
Yep.
You know, and some people would say, do I need to feel my emotions? I don't think we have to go back and relive all the traumas, but I think we can live a healthier, fuller life when we're feeling emotions and sort of not repressing them as a strategy.
It definitely is. Yeah. Being able to have, some awareness around what's in front of you. Well, we've got like 12 more minutes, and I'd love to hear a little bit about some of, you know, what are you doing today? And maybe the deeper question is, what is your, I guess, methodology, or maybe what makes your approach a little bit different? You know, maybe from what people are trying now. So talk about what you're doing now.
Yeah. So as we talked about, I always wanted to be a journalist. I never set out to be a mind-body coach or a life coach. But after I experienced this recovery, I couldn't help but practice this work, because it just was so powerful for me. So I went on to do different kinds of trainings, mind-body coach trainings with Schubner, life coach trainings. And now I work with clients one-on-one. I also have a group class coming up around the same time Jim and Julie do, actually, in January 28th. But I really work with clients where they're at. I like working with people who are open and receptive to this approach. But it's fascinating to me to find where someone's stuck, because I think like Sarno's knowledge is true, but people get stuck in different places. So sometimes it is that they just need to feel more sensations in the body. Sometimes it is that although they know that they're not in danger, they keep ruminating over and over on what's wrong physically. So we have sessions over Zoom, and some of it's knowledge. A lot of it is the practices, some somatic type practices, or learning to be with the body sensations, sort of a graded exposure where they're starting to feel sensations that scare them. With one client, you know, she'll sit down while we're in our session, because that's what triggers her pain. And, you know, we'll just sort of reprogram her brain that this is safe in steps,
yeah,
moving out back into their life. I love the emotional work and the somatic work, so I bring that in as often as possible, but not everybody's open to that. And, you know, and that's okay too. The knowledge itself is really powerful. And I find that, it's just helpful for people to sort of have a personal guide sometime, you know, to help them see where they're stuck. I also, because fatigue was my main symptom, and I don't hear a whole lot about that. You hear more about chronic pain, because that's just a louder symptom, you know, right. And I think more people deal with it. So I work with some people specifically who have fatigue, and because I can really relate to that symptom. And then, I'm teaching a group class I'm really excited about with another mind-body coach named Michelle Wiegers in late January. She healed from so many things. She was actually in a wheelchair and she discovered Sarno's work and recovered. And so we both also love the idea of creating a sense of community support in this class. And not so much to talk about your symptoms. You know, it's not the traditional model where you're just getting on there complaining, but to really cheer each other on and just provide that element too of connection, which people are really craving so much now.
What are maybe a couple of things that you would say are most vital to your personal, and then I'll have a separate questions related to this, but maybe a couple of the things that are most pivotal for your sort of personal maintenance plan, if you will. Like, what are things that you're regularly doing, if anything? Like for me, let me give you an example that I, I'm still a big believer in doing diaphragmatic breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm still a big believer in a somatic, like a somatic tracking exercise. I usually do both of those things once a day. But outside of that, I don't really do much. If life is really feeling super heavy and I'm getting constantly like stuck on one thing, obsessing over one thing, then I know that's probably a good indication that, you know, 20 minutes of writing will do me really good justice. Are there any particular things that you're doing regularly for yourself that are part of like a maintenance type of a plan?
Yeah, definitely. Somewhat similar to you. I love the somatic tracking. I would say every single morning when I first wake up, I just really tune into my body sensations. So I'll probably lay there 5 or 10 minutes and just really get into the body, like what's happening. I might do a morning meditation. My meditation shifted where it's much more body centered than doing a mantra in my mind. But then I'll usually sort of sit up and check in with, okay, what am I feeling physically? What am I feeling emotionally? What thoughts are going through my mind? Just kind of looking at the state of my mind. I'll also kind of check in if there's any intuition or guidance I'm getting. What I've found is, as I felt more emotions and kind of cultivated this ability, you know, we get a lot of messages and guidance through our body that are helpful, that aren't just sort of a misunderstanding in the brain, like the gut instinct. You know, if you meet someone that seems so nice, but you get this queasy feeling and later you find out why, I mean, that's information from the body. So I'll kind of check in with those different aspects of myself in the morning. And, also in the evening, at the end of the day, I usually do somatic tracking. Sometimes I'll still listen to Jim's recordings he gave me 2 years ago because I just want to hear someone else's voice. Usually I just sort of lay there and feel into the body and maybe I'll follow a certain sensation. And then the affirmations, I'm doing that all the time. So for me, because that light bulb moment was I'm not sick. You know, I couldn't believe I'm healthy. That would have just been like another planet. But, right, I'll say that. Like, I'm not sick. I'm okay. I'm safe. If symptoms come up a little bit, I'm kind of talking to myself a lot. I like something called, you mentioned the box breath. I'd like a regulating breath, which is extending the exhale about twice as long as the inhale. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not quite that, but the exhale really activates the parasympathetic nervous system, the rest and digest part. So for me, that's a really calming breath. Sometimes I'll do that if I'm feeling just like really kind of amped up. Journaling for me works when I'm angry about something and I can't seem to get it out any other way. So I might journal, I don't know, a couple times a month where it's just total vent onto the page,
yep.
You know, just completely F-bomb, rip it up afterwards. And I find that just kind of offloads that energy. So I think those are the main things. And I'm always just kind of looking at what ways am I still limiting myself? I love to hike in nature. And there was this, you know, I'm in San Diego, so it's not mountains like you have in Washington, but there was a pretty big mountain and I just still wasn't hiking it. And I think there was something in my mind that was just like, oh, you don't do that, because for years I didn't. It was like, wait a minute, why? I can hike that.
Yep.
And so I just did the other day and it felt so great. So it's kind of also just always expanding my perceived limitations. And as you know, with this work, it's so fulfilling because there really aren't all these little boxes that we used to put ourselves in or society puts us in, limiting us as much anymore. It's just sort of like, okay, what do I want to do? And knowing I can do it and kind of stepping out in that.
I was thinking of something when you were the you're not sick versus you're healthy or you're like, you know, whatever that distinction was where you're like, you know, the, even though they mean exactly pretty much the same thing, just the way that they're said. And I used to have this phrase that I would say to myself when I first started training again. So, you know, I read like Sarno's book at the end of June of this particular year, you know, June 30th, like it was the last day or last couple of days of that month. And in those first few days that I was getting back to training and everything felt so heavy and it was so tiring and all this kind of stuff. I remember thinking to myself, I like yelling, you're alive felt very different. So I used to always say to myself, you're not, or I'm not dead yet is what I would always say. I'm not dead yet. And it reminds me a lot of what you're saying. It's like the thing, you know, if you're not dead yet, logic would tell you that you're still alive. Right. But if I would have just said, I'm alive, it wouldn't have hit the same way as I'm not dead yet. So that's what that made me think of.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, it is like our mind can only jump so far, I guess, to kind of wake up that part of us that realizes the truth. And when I work with people now, I go into the session really thinking, you are not sick. You are not broken. There is nothing wrong with you. And I hold that place. And I am compassionate for them because, as we both know, there's a lot of suffering and it's real suffering. And people have felt so misunderstood and brushed aside by the medical system that it's really important to acknowledge that, like that part that is hurt and scared. But I really see people as not even just whole and healed. There's literally nothing wrong with them to begin with, right? It's just that the brain is creating sensations and those aren't even, you know, those aren't dangerous.
Yep.
We learn to be with the experiences and the sensations that are part of being human.
Before we get out of here, remind us, about the upcoming endeavor at the end of January. You know, where can they find more information about that? Let's do that one more time.
Yeah. So the class is called How We Heal Chronic Fatigue and Pain. And, it's on my website, RebeccaTolan.com, and it starts January 28th. It'll be every 2 weeks for 12 weeks. We'll meet live and we'll have all kinds of exercises and meditations and things in between classes. And yeah, I'm really excited. It's great. I just talked to Jim and there's all kinds of classes coming out of San Diego. So there's kind of a hotbed here.
Yeah. What is with it down there? I don't know.
Yeah.
So I'm on your website. I want to make sure that we point people to the exact right place that they need to go to be able to register. So I'm on your website, which is Rebecca, common spelling, last name, TOLIN.com. Where would they go to get more information on this, on the class?
Yeah. You know, what's funny. I'm actually just about to make that class live in the next couple of days. So I'll do an announcement bar on the top of the website that'll say, click on this for the class.
Awesome. Okay. Stay on the line, but we're going to fake our goodbyes and then stay on the line and we'll talk for a couple minutes after, after air. So, Rebecca, thank you so much for joining me. I'm sure we'll do a part two at some point. But I appreciate you jumping on and telling us your story. And, I think it's always cool when, you know, we don't hear about chronic fatigue syndrome much. I don't know if anybody's talked about it in this podcast. They may have, but it's nice to hear, you know, a little bit diverging symptoms and different things that we don't hear about all the time. So I appreciate it.
I really appreciate all you do, Eddie. Thank you so much.